Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Scottish Watches podcast. It's a good show, this one. I'm looking forward to this. This is an interview show, so I've been looking forward to this one for a while. We've been planning this for a wee while.
Does that mean we get to hear you less?
Yeah, it does actually, yeah.
Right, I good. Speak less. I'm looking forward to this as well.
But I've got like a 10-minute more. Let's let him introduce himself, because as a man of the world, I'm sure he's used to demanding attention in the room, wandering in and announcing to the world who he is. So take it away, special guest. Who are you and where you're from?
Hello, well, my name is Marc-André Deschoux. I am from Switzerland, Geneva, and I am the founder of the Watches TV.
Yes, Watches TV is it's one of the channels that I, as a...
It's one of my favourites.
It's one of the ones I've been watching the longest. I'll confess, I did come across the Urban Gentry first, but Watches TV is always worth tuning into. And that's kind of why we've got Mark on, because Mark does have some quite unique access, being that he keeps on telling the stories, much like we always tell stories to the Americans, that if we want to go to Geneva, it's just a £65 flight from Edinburgh. Mark likes telling stories whereby he says, yeah,
I just walked out
my front door, turned left, yep. And there was Akriva, or there was Grubel Forsey, or Embiet, or whatever else. So Mark is right in the centre of it. So we thought we'd get him on the show to just find out a bit more about him, a bit more about what's happening with Watches TV, and just take it from there. But as is ever the case...
Wristwatch check.
That's what I was about to say. I was about to remember to do that.
Well done. And I think it's the guest always goes first. So Mark, what are you wearing today on the wrist?
Well, I'm wearing an old school 1972 Omega, I bought it with a bit of amusement because it's kind of a yellow gold plated, rather not subtle type of watch. And actually, it kind of grew on me. It seems like 2 weeks since I've had it, or 3 weeks. I've been wearing it almost every day, and I really, really like it.
Oh, good. And Rick, your turn?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm wearing Panerai again.
Oh, God. Well, which Panerai is this for the two people who don't know?
For the two people who don't know, it's the 1950s 8-day GMT. I think it's the 233, but it might be the 322 or the 232, or the rearrange those numbers into some other order to give you the reference. But it's 8-day power reserve. And it's my favourite watch, as everyone will know, because it's the only thing I ever wear. Unless people send me free stuff, in which case I send that as the good brand ambassador that I am.
Good, good.
And what about yourself?
Today is Monday, which means I'm going to the gym, which means it's time for a G-Shock, but I'm wearing one of the new ones that came out. So this is the Red and Shadow Chrome 25th Anniversary 1600 series, which everybody seems to hate, but not quite as much as the gold one that I bought as well.
So, Mark, tell us a bit about yourself, because I've yet to meet someone who says that they're from Geneva who actually really is from Geneva. They tend to be, I'm from Geneva, but my father was Hungarian and my mother was from Peru.
Yeah, well, that's kind of true. I mean, we're all half something here and there. I mean, it's a village. Geneva is really a village, but it's quite a cosmopolitan village. So you have people from all over the world, which is pretty nice. By definition, actually, there are at least one represented from any nation of this planet here because of all the international organization. So for myself, I'm actually half Swiss and half Swedish. And this is sometimes a combination which is rather difficult to explain, because some people say, well, isn't that the same country? So, well, not really. You
know? Yes, so that's what Edward said as well.
That's what Edward said in his Moser video, because he uses the term Swedish as a joke. But does that mean that, technically speaking, you are the most neutral person on the planet if you're half Swedish and half Swiss? Have you ever picked a side in any debate?
Never, ever.
No. Yeah. So which side, sorry, did you say which side is Swedish and which side is Swiss?
So my mom is Swedish, and my dad was Swiss.
And whereabouts in Sweden? Just because I happen to know Sweden quite well.
From Stockholm.
From Stockholm, very nice, yes. Very nice. Lots of lakes.
I remember some good videos coming out of Stockholm about 20 years ago when there was people driving cars very quickly and videoing it and putting it on the internet. Getaway in Stockholm. Don't know if you ever remember that.
Something gumballish something.
Yes, that was good. That was my introduction to Stockholm, and always wanted to go and check out the street racing. But yeah, there we go. So do you want to tell us a little bit about Watches TV and how it is that you, well, ended up with over 1,000 videos online? Mm-hmm. You've organised watch mm-hmm. trips. Where did this all start for you?
Well, as a good little Swiss guy, I've always liked watchmaking. I mean, I always like kind of the intricacy that is behind it, kind of the mechanical dimension. That was kind mm-hmm. of a given. And I remember, I mean, when I was a teenager, reading a lot about it. And it was at this moment, you know, when the kind of the world of complication was getting back on the forefront. And it was really, I found that, I mean, really fascinating. But it was just more kind of a hobby like that on the side. Well, not even a hobby. It was just an interest. And then I actually, in the early 2000s, I started, started working a little bit before that, and I was like kind of a business consultant, without being a rude word, but that's what I was. And I happened to manage a group of companies which were suppliers of the watchmaking industry, and we did most of the 3D movies of the early 2000s that everybody used to love. But we had a multiple activity. We did also engineering work, private label activity, other communication activity, and also, with the private label, this, you know, it really gave me a good kind of transversal understanding of the industry, and it enabled me to meet quite a lot of people from different brands and from different departments, different sectors, and I found that obviously very, very interesting. But my goal at that time was really to set up an audiovisual production company, which I did with some partners here in Geneva. Right. And at the time, I remember what I was, I mean, we had a rather versatile activity in working for TV, for the cinema, for advertising agencies, and for direct brands. And we did corporate movies and things like that. And sometimes, you know, we did really pretty fancy movies and expensive movies. And ultimately, I was thinking to myself, but actually, I mean, who really looks at these movies? What do they think about it? I thought that already at the time that it was sometimes a little bit, I mean, it was, those were the good old days of watchmaking, you know, when money was pouring in from everywhere and people were spending without even necessarily counting too much. So we're talking the early 2000s, mid 2000s, like that. I mean, before the financial crisis.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I found that kind of really, you know, just, it didn't make much sense, I thought, in a certain way. And so I decided, well, maybe there's another way of getting some stories about watchmaking out there. And after a while, after 7 years of running this company, I got a little bit tired of it. And I said, well, and, you know, it was a pretty large company and a lot of kind of operational management issues. And that wasn't really my thing. Also, I was a bit tired of that. So, okay, let's go back to a simpler organization. And I said, let's take kind of both sets of skills, my understanding of watchmaking, plus what I learned about making movies and so forth, and let's set up the Watches TV. So it was very kind of simple, but it really was based on the idea that watch brands need to get the word out there, but they can't do it only with a kind of type of corporate message, because this will tire people. And it turns out that it has tired quite a lot of people, which is a good thing for me. But and also, I mean, for me, something that was really important from the start was that to show that, I mean, a watch is only, I mean, the end result of a long process. So what I want to show more is the actual process that leads to that end result, and therefore show the people, show the competencies. And this is not necessarily something that watch brands really, I mean, want to focus too much, or sometimes they cheat a little bit in a certain way in their way of telling their story. So I said, okay, we could do it maybe a bit more in a more genuine way. But the thing that was kind of the surprise is that initially I thought, okay, I would only do interviews of people, of CEOs, of different people like that. And quite rapidly, I mean, after a couple of years, I realized that these people weren't necessarily the most, I mean, the best one to tell the story, because either they tell, everyone tells exactly the same thing, you know?
Yep. Uh-huh.
Or otherwise, yeah. Or otherwise, I mean, the other ones are not necessarily too good in front of a camera also, which is understandable. I mean, it's not something that is very natural to be, you know, facing in camera. And of course, for watchmakers, it's definitely not something that they've been used to. So I decided after a while, I mean, I didn't decide, I was kind of forced to go myself in front of that camera. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you look at the kind of first videos when I was in front, it looked kind of ridiculous and shy. But then I kind of got a little bit more accustomed to and felt pretty comfortable. And now it's, so again, it wasn't the goal of being in front of the camera. It just happened like that. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that it's kind of a fun thing to do.
Well, that's one of the things I've noticed with all your videos. Me and Rick have only been into this hobby for about 3 years now, so that's where our journey begins. In every video I've seen of yours, you're always excited and happy. It's never boring, it's never dull. And you have a different way of explaining things about these massive big brands that mm-hmm. some people would be scared to speak to,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's all fun, it's all excitement, and it's new things. It's not repeating the same old stuff that all the other YouTube people do or all the other watch media do.
Yeah.
Did you get a lot of access, or did you find that the Swiss brands were very old fashioned and they didn't want to do all this multimedia online type stuff?
Yeah, well, there's some of them are still are kind of not very open to the idea. But then, you know, I just said to myself, let's just do it. You know, I didn't see any constraints. You know, I said, okay, mm-hmm. well, I can do whatever I want and let's just do it. And as simple as that, you know. And again, it's not because you're talking about something serious that you have to take yourself too seriously either. You know, it's you can bring a bit of entertainment and a bit of fun in that, because ultimately, I mean watchmaking for me is all about fun and pleasure. You know, if you buy a watch, it's because you want to please yourself, and the people that's something that I love about watchmaking, is that at every single level you have people, I mean, the ones that are really good at what they do, they generally have a lot of pleasure at what they do, and so just let's keep it at that level, you know, and let's make it fun.
Watch collecting, watch enthusiasts, it's a hobby, and a hobby isn't something unless it's fun. Mm-hmm. So that's the way we look at it. We've come at it from obviously being Scottish. We're very funny about things. We don't take things too seriously. Mm-hmm. And that seems to have worked out quite well. And we buy, like I mentioned, I've got a G-Shock today. Mm-hmm. It could be the Rolex, could be an Omega, it could be a vintage Bulova. Mm-hmm. It's all about having fun. So that's kind of the way that we do things. And I actually met you a couple of years ago because you were at Basel, not last year but the year before, and you had this media room set up and you were doing all the live reports, and I came over and I just said hello. But how did you find that, doing the live stuff from Basel?
Yeah, I mean, in a certain way it was a bit too much, because I mean we are a small team, okay, so mm-hmm. to set this up was obviously quite cumbersome, but at the same time it was very exciting and it was a really cool experience to be really on the other side of the uh-huh. show, being in a certain way an exhibitor, which by the way also lets you see some really strange thing about the organization of Baselworld.
Right.
So that was also very interesting and insightful, I have to say.
So what was the strangest thing you came across?
Ah, no, it's just, you know, it's
God, stop being Swedish and Swiss. Stop being neutral.
No, it's just like everybody says, you know, it's about the costs of things, you know. It's uh-huh. just it was I just give you one example. I mean, just to put like if you want to put a flat TV screen the cost of renting out a flat TV screen for the 5-day event costs you like 5 times if you buy a new one. You know, I exaggerate a little bit, you know, but I mean, this is the kind of things, you know. So it's, you know, those little things, I mean, if you add them up, obviously, for brands, you can imagine the cost of everything that they do over there. Must be quite a lot. But nevertheless, what was really, I mean, okay, this is, apart from this, I mean, what was really interesting was really to be able to indeed interact with all the people that came to us. And have, we had really, I mean, cool feedback coming from everyone. And that was very, I mean, it makes you feel, you know, happy, proud, and purposeful also.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. But again, I mean, it was quite a, it took quite a lot of organization. And I was definitely dead after that. So this year, for instance, considering going from SIGH to this, doing everything at the same time would be just like impossible.
Yeah.
And how did Baselworld feel about putting up someone that, from their point of view?
Oh, they were great. No, they were great. They were great. They were very supportive. And I really appreciated that. And I still appreciate, I mean, what they're trying to do. And I've always been, I mean, I've been critical of Basel, of course, but hopefully in a constructive criticism type of approach, because I really think that, I mean, the industry deserves such a show, maybe obviously a little bit different, need to evolve also, but they were really good.
And so how big is the team from Watches TV?
Oh, we're a small team, like I said, so we're kind of a four-man team. Four people team, because also I have a girl, and which is nice. They're mainly kind of, let's say, I mean, technicians, cameraman, editors, and I take care of the journalistic part and, you know, all this kind of thing.
Yeah. What cameras do you use?
Oh, we use a huge wide range of cameras. Yeah, that's the cool thing about what we do or what I do. I mean, it's just that, I mean, all those things are literally kind of, I mean, I'm a little bit geeky, so it's pretty nice to be able to, you know, have this perfect excuse to buy all this gear. But no, technology evolves also, so that's good. And we have better solutions at better prices. Now we're shooting most of our pack shots, for instance, in 6K.
Wow.
And the next step is obviously 8K. And so, I mean, we're just continuously... I really hope that... and some of the feedback that we receive about what we do is that the cinematography of what we do is always kind of up there, and I really want to keep it that way. I mean, there are indeed easiest way of doing things. I mean, but I still come a little bit from that broadcast industry where, you know, you have a bit some quality.
You can see that, though. You can see the level of quality that's in there.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Sometimes a little bit frustrating, I have to be honest, because you have guys, you know, that are just standing in their kitchen with the horrible lighting and camera, and they're getting hundreds of thousands of views, saying not much sometimes. And we put so much effort, and, you know, and the drone shots and so forth, and the move. It makes at least some people happy. And it makes us happy, yeah.
It makes a world of difference, because when I watch your channel on my 65-inch OLED TV instead of watching it on my phone, you can see the difference. And I know the guys you're talking about who've got really shitty lighting. They haven't got proper anything. So no diffusion. It's just one bulb and they're talking into a phone or a really cheap camera with a bad microphone. And it just doesn't work. And then yours comes on and it's like watching broadcast television.
Yeah.
So you're doing the right thing.
Well, thank you. Actually, you know what? Just interestingly enough, and following what you just mentioned about looking at on TV screens, we indeed have more and more people looking at on smart TVs. And indeed, I mean, we do everything. I mean, we broadcast everything in 4K. And I think it's really cool that, you know, YouTube allows you to do that. And now with bigger internet tubes, I mean, obviously, it makes it a little bit more convenient for everyone. And the good thing about it also is that people that look on TV, I mean, they really look until the very last second, all of them, basically. You know, it's on the phone, you're more in a zapping type of mood. So it's nice to see indeed the TV picking up.
You've obviously mentioned Prime Time, which is your magazine format show that comes out about once a month or thereabouts.
Yeah.
What other shows do you guys have on the Watches TV?
We some of these shows, they kind of come and go in a certain way, because again, we're like small team and we're trying to do our best. So we have one that I particularly like, and we're going to do more and more of these, are called walkthroughs, but I'll get back on this one. And I mean, we have like more kind of historical type of video reports called the Who's Who of Watchmaking. And we come back this time rather extensively on the history of some of the most famous brands, and or not necessarily historical brands, but the ones that also we do appreciate, try to understand a little bit more where they come from. So if it's on a historical point of view, then I will generally tell the story. But if it's more on a contemporary brand and there is a strong entrepreneurial dimension behind these, then I do like to be able to interview the founders and so forth that will be able to tell their story. When it's only like a corporate executive talking about the 200-year-old brand, it interests me less. You know, it's I can tell the story for that, because otherwise we know exactly which kind of story we're going to get. So the Who's Who of Watchmaking is that's a nice series. We used to have one that we've stopped because it just takes so much time to do, and we did it indeed with the Naked Watchmaker, Peter Speakmarin, with this called the deconstructions of some.
They were great. See the one you did with the Submariner, and you did it over two videos. That was the best education I've ever had.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, and I like that. You know, we call this series the "Don't Do This at Home."
Yeah,
I found that pretty amusing. You know, it's just, I mean, you can, but you'll never fix it up afterwards, that's for sure. But yeah, those were great, and people indeed understand the intricacy of what is proper mechanical watchmaking. And with the Sub, what was interesting also is that, I mean, nobody sees the interior of a Rolex. And this was a perfect occasion to show something indeed quite different, and to show that, I mean, it's not because they're producing them in the hundreds of thousands that they don't take their job seriously. And then for something that is completely industrial and industrially finished, I mean, those are good movements.
Well, it showed that video explained to me what everybody says. You know, a Rolex is robust, it's reliable, it's a workhorse, and you can give it a good beating.
Mm-hmm.
And when Peter took it to pieces, basically, in front of our eyes, you saw that it wasn't a balance cock, it was a balance bridge, it was reinforced, all the parts were in the right place to give it that structure and rigidity that, you know, when you see inside the case back of other brands, you can see how they're a little bit delicate and a little bit fragile, and it explains why Rolex are giving you 5-year warranties, 10-year service intervals.
Now,
interestingly, you say about that you don't very often see inside a Rolex. You did a video recently for the unboxing of an Artisan de Genève, which was in fact a Rolex that you can see right through. What was your, are they local to you? Do you know them?
Yeah, of course. Well, as their name states, they are from Geneva.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes people put things on watches, and that's
that's for sure.
They're really based in China.
Don't even go on the made in Switzerland. But yeah, no, they are from Geneva, and though, I mean, I'm not too much into the tuning up of watches and so forth, but I do think their approach is an interesting one and does bring some added value. I mean, there's some proper craftsmanship that has been put into these different projects. I think it's interesting. Here I really see is something interesting. Just, you know, black PVD coating on a Rolex, okay, it's fun, but that's tuning, okay? Here we're beyond tuning.
And what do you think about, obviously they are doing some stuff to Rolex as others are doing to other watches, and this whole area of customization, the likes of Rolex, Swatch Group, others are starting to sit up, take notice and issue legal documents. What do you think about the whole industry of people modifying watches and then reselling them on? Because presumably Artisan de Genève are not the only ones doing this of significance in Switzerland. I assume there are others on a very small scale that are also doing it.
Mm-hmm. I have no issue with it as a principle, okay? I mean, you can do whatever you want with the watch. It's where you draw the line, okay? Obviously, if you did that on Patek Philippe 1518 from 1943, then that would be kind of a crime, okay? But on an industrially produced watch, seriously, I mean, there's like no big deal, I think, personally. You know, it's again, then the problem is that if you try to resell it as a Rolex, then you have an issue, obviously, there. But if you say, well, it's a modified one, and you know, then that's fine. You can do that with any object, I would say.
Yes, and this appears to be, obviously, there's a court case going on in the States at the moment between Swatch Group and Vortec Watches.
having a look at that very issue about the modification of pocket watches into wristwatches. So we'll see which way that goes in terms of Hamilton. I'm just wondering whether these sort of things find themselves, because presumably when you go to a coffee shop in Geneva, like half the people in there work in the watch industry. presumably it's like being a banker in London, that everybody, or a stockbroker, everybody knows everybody else, and there's always loads of gossip going on.
Uh-huh.
I assume it's like that in the coffee shops of Switzerland.
There is a bit of that for sure. Yeah, that's true.
And is there a place that everybody goes? I mean, you can tell us and we'll edit it out so that we can just go along and listen in all the chats that are going on.
Well, there is this beep place places. And then the beep one. That's really nice also. No, there's not really like, I would say, a single spot for that. No, it's but people do mingle for sure.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Well, I've got some questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
You have been talking about watch trips, and I would love to find out a little bit more about that, because last year I took some guys from Scotland across to the SIHH public day, but they opened it at 3 p.m, which meant we had a lot of time to kill in Geneva, and we ended up just going a walk, and we ended up in the Richard Mille Boutique, Mont Blanc, all kinds of places, Bucherer, and that was fun as a day out. But the watch trips that you organise, they're like really big, so do you want to explain a little bit about them?
Sure.
What it actually means is that his are really amateur and you actually managed to organise watch trips.
You did it right. I need to learn.
Actually take people somewhere.
Well, no, actually the original idea came from the fact that because I really read every comment on our YouTube channel, okay, and I try to respond to almost every single comment.
Oh, we ignore every comment in our YouTube channel.
but we are now going to put loads of comments on your YouTube channel for you to deal with.
And often, I mean, there were like, you know, sentences of, you know, people saying, oh, this is, your country is so beautiful. Oh, I would love to visit. Oh, I would love this. I would love that. And at one point I said, okay, well, if you want to, just come, you know. It was kind of simple as that. So I initially organized indeed this watch trip that we've actually filmed the entire thing. So, and this time I had invited actually people to come. So that was really, it was cool. I was very happy and proud of that. I just asked people to, you know, come to Geneva by their own means and then we'll take it from there. But I mean, that was, okay, that was fun. But the counterpart was that indeed, I mean, we would film everything. Okay, that's, but now the goal is to make it a little bit more private, of course. We do a little film, but just for a personal souvenir of the people that attended.
Oh, good.
And because, I mean, we are about video, you know, here. So, yeah, the goal is to have small groups of people between 4 and 6, because I would like to keep it, you know, just a bit of a, you know, family kind of moment. I mean, it's not like a group thing where, you know, coming in with the big bus and 20 people. I don't think you get much quality interaction, where whether within the group or obviously with the places that you're going to visit. Because some of the, I mean, most of the places that we will be, that we are visiting are small workshops, small ateliers. And if you come with a group of 10 people, it just messes everything. And we like, again, that's where also I'm very Swiss. I like to be very discreet and I don't like to disturb anybody. So the less we, you know, indeed disturb the regular production process of the people, the places that we visit, the better I feel. And so that's why with a group of 6, I think we manage to be kind of discreet, kind of, and give the opportunity of the people attending these watch trip, really the opportunity of interacting personally with the watchmakers, with the founders, with all the people that are within those workshops. If you're too many people, it gets a bit not only distracting, but people get to be a little bit more shy or something like that. Here it remains very informal, and this is the cool thing.
Good. And when's your next trip?
The next trip is going to be in the end of May. And this is the thing that also I've changed this year, because before we only used to do like 5-day watch tripping activity, and sometimes it could be long for a few for some people. So we propose a 3-day version. And on additional to this 5-day version, because I mean the 5-day, I mean those are intense days. Okay, I mean we have at least 2-3 different watchmaking activities per day, And but generally people that attend, I love them because they're just like so thirsty for what we what we're showing and visiting. Mm-hmm. So I it sometimes feels that it could continue another few days, you know, that guys will still have the same enthusiasm, which is great.
So where are your favorite places to visit in terms of watch manufacturers? Who really puts on a show for those that you take along?
Well, I always like to kind of balance a little bit between the, you know, the visit of I would say a big brand, a big manufacturer, and then more smaller. I mean, on the Watches TV, we're more you know, kind of geared towards the smaller type of brands and outfits. So it's, I think it's good for people to understand by, you know, really living what is the difference indeed between a big boy and kind of a more traditional artisan type of workshop of brands making only 50, 100, maybe 200 watches per year. I mean, it's nothing comparable with somebody that is doing 20 or 30,000 watches per year. Those are two very separate worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so who is your favorite that you've visited, say, with them in the last year?
This is a kind of a tough one because I love so many of them, I have to say, really.
We'll not tell anybody that you have a favorite. It's like your children. We'll not tell anyone that you're picking favorites.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, from going from visiting, for instance, an exceptional place like with at Philippe Dufour, where, I mean, this is like a small little workshop. This is obviously completely magical. And without falling into the stereotype, you know, of the old watchmaker and so forth. No, I mean, this is real watchmaking, but to a bit more elaborate type of organizations like, you know, Grubel Forsay, for instance. I mean, Grubel Forsay, they have just one of the most incredible, most beautiful building out there for watchmaking. It's like it's a glass cathedral devoted to beautiful high-end watchmaking, and it's just absolutely fabulous. It's quite spectacular, I have to say. But then we also like to go, you know, to visit some artisans, you know, or suppliers. I like to show things a little bit different, you know, just not only brands, but also show indeed some of the side activity of watchmaking. For instance, last year, a couple of years ago, this was really cool. I mean, I took the group to visit the Geneva Watchmaking School, you know, and we had them then go through kind of a masterclass, but not taught by the teachers of the school, but by the students themselves. So the guys that were participating, you know, their teachers were like 16, 17 year old girls and boys, and they could see and feel the passion that these young kids have into what they're doing. It was absolutely great, and it just you know, showed to these to the guys that participated that watchmaking is not something of the past or whatsoever. There is indeed those young kids that are really completely into it, and that was cool. And then we ended up on top of it, and this was even the best. ended up having a raclette, you know, cheese raclette in the evening, and having drinks with the teachers and so forth. Those are special moments. Those are moments that you can't buy, you know. This is because we are kind of part of the family in a certain way, and this opens the doors that you can't necessarily open by yourself, and this is cool.
Now Ricky is well known for being a bit of a klutz in terms of going on to watch exhibition stands and dropping things.
That one time,
I'm sure
it was a Roger Dubuis, but you know, it was that one time.
So my question is, if you're taking folk on tours that obviously you don't know until they arrive, there must be one or two stories whereby it's actually gone just a little bit pear-shaped, surely, from forgetting luggage to accidentally walking away with something that they weren't supposed to. As Ricky has done, I think it was the Z of the Zenith sign you tried to steal.
No, that wasn't me.
Was that not? That was other people. Spanish Rob, was it? You blame
it? It was, who was that? It was either Chris or Isaac at the Zenith party. That was
so,
not me.
Have you got any good stories about where, you know, you've gone really delicately into this atelier and then somebody's just come in like a complete bull in a china shop, swinging their rucksack around, taking out the exhibition stands?
No, but now that you talk to me about it, I'm feeling a bit scared, okay? I'm touching wood, touching my head, touching everything. It actually never happened. And thank God. But indeed, it could happen.
Well, at least when it does, you'll have it in 6K video. It'll be a YouTube, like, you've done all this great quality YouTube videos that have been watched by hundreds of thousands of people, but the one that will go viral and get you 100 million views will be the guy that wipes out the Grubel Forsy stand with his rucksack as he's walking in.
Oh my
that's
God.
The one, that's the one you want. That's the money shot.
Well, if it does 100 million, then okay, we can trade that. That's okay.
That's fine.
Yeah, the ad revenue would pay for it. You'd be fine.
Absolutely.
So what's next then for you guys at the Watches TV? What's the 2020 vision for you?
Well, first of all, there are still so many stories that to be told. I mean, it's just, this is cool. I mean, again, like you said, we've done more than 1,000 video reports, 1,200, a bit more than that. And I still haven't, I still don't have the feeling of having repeated myself. You know, this is just completely crazy. And there are still so many stories to, again, to cover, which is really cool.
I seem to remember a video maybe a year or 2 years ago where it wasn't even a watchmaker. It was like a technology show and they were using specialized equipment and you were explaining how that worked, you know, and you were talking about your glasses being produced by a company. It's not just fixated completely on watches. It's things that people are interested in or a little bit associated.
Yes. So, yeah, well, that's something I really want to do, indeed, because the watchmaking is, I mean, 99% of the population sees watchmaking, I mean, they see the watches coming out of watchmaking. And like I said, I like the process. And the process is not only done by brands. It has always been kind of a network of competencies scattered throughout Switzerland and elsewhere also. And therefore, I mean, I indeed love to be able to show a bit more some of these suppliers that are really, I mean, state of the art in what they do, because they are just, you know, they're the best in their field. And they have been, unfortunately, a little bit, you know, forgotten by the industry and the brands, and especially group brands, because they've integrated so much of these competencies. But by doing so, it's not always the best solution, because people, it's not that you get lazy, but you get a little bit tired and things like that. But when it's your specialty to be the best at this, you know, doing screws, doing whatever, then you really have, I mean, you're really motivated in doing it as the best possible way and finding new solution, being innovative and so forth. So this is, to be able to show a bit more this network, because there are really some surprising things to share also. And I think people would be interested with that. So we have a few ideas along this route. Which is cool. We'll see. I mean, it's obviously, it's a little bit less glamorous. And I know we're never going to do like millions of views with these kind of videos. But nevertheless, I think it's my way also of, you know, paying respect to this watchmaking ecosystem that I really love. I mean, I really love the guys that are behind it. Like I said, they're passionate, they're invested. They like to do their job well. You know, I haven't seen that many industry where, you know, you've got guys that are doing more or less the same gesture since 25 years, and they're still as passionate as they one, you know, and they just want to, and they're proud of what they do, and those are positive things, you know.
I think maybe it's very unique in specific car tuning companies where they're working on vintage engines. Yeah. Maybe that's the most similar thing I can think of. Yeah. But you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, or, you know, people, you know, I don't know, you know, just, you know, wine people or whiskey people, you know, that want to be really be serious about what they do and very committed. And well, I respect that. Yeah.
Well, speaking of whiskey, have you ever been over to Scotland?
No, that's I'm ashamed, okay?
It's £65 from Geneva.
Yeah, I've been to Geneva 5 times last year and you haven't even been to Scotland once.
Yeah,
that's not good.
And especially, I mean, I do like whiskey, I do like to play golf, I see. Mm-hmm. Probably there are some nice people to be met over there also. So, I mean, there's not much of an excuse. I agree.
We might have to arrange something later in the year when you come across here. Okay. But if people are going to be coming across to Geneva, because we've said this a million times, said it in this podcast, it is so inexpensive via EasyJet or other budget airlines to get from the UK to Geneva. Yeah. You can fly there and then fly back in the same day.
Sure, yeah.
If somebody was coming across just for a wander around, not doing the watch tripping, because that's obviously big, but if they were coming across, what would you recommend they do in a day in Geneva?
Here, there are obviously a few things to be seen. There aren't that many, I mean, today in the city of Geneva, there are not that many more watchmaking activity in terms of, you know, manufacturing and things like that. They're all outside of the city for a normal reason, I mean, for obvious reason. But in the city, indeed, I mean, you have this Rue du Rhône, which is our kind of Fifth Avenue in a certain way, where you have all the watch brands that have a boutique there. I'm not saying that they're all successful in terms of business, but at least they're there because they have to be there. You know, it's they have to represent, which means that in a quite short, length of this street, I mean, you can see so much, you know.
And this, is that this, the one where JLC are on that street?
Yeah, but I mean, everyone is on that street. I mean,
I remember.
Seriously, everyone is on that street. And you have a few nice boutiques, and I mean, obviously, you have to go to the Patek Philippe boutique. I mean, this is really, it's an experience in itself. It's a wonderful boutique. It looks really, really fantastic. And they treat you well. It's not because it's Patek Philippe that, you know, they will be kind of nosy or whatsoever looking at you. I mean, it's a public place. I mean, it's a public boutique. You can go there. And it's and on top of it, I mean, this used to be like, that was the historical manufacturer of Patek Philippe. Before. So, I mean, it really has some historical significance at the time. And now it's just a showcase of, I mean, you have different floors and it's great. And talking about Patek Philippe, I mean, that's a must. You have to go and visit the Patek Museum. It's really the most incredible, fantastic watch collection out there. And it's not only Patek Philippe, okay, let's be clear about that. It's really, it retraces all the whole history of mechanical watchmaking. And you have timepieces since, I mean, more than 500 year old. I mean, it's unbelievable. Oh. And yeah, the quality. And there also people grasp what people were capable of doing 250 years ago without machines, without anything, you know, without electricity whatsoever. I mean, the level of craftsmanship that you can witness in some of these watches, the finishing and so forth, it's unbelievable. So I would say it's really a must. It's a total must. So, and this will, I mean, actually, this can take you the day. you might have to stay a bit longer.
And who are the up-and-comers that you're seeing? Because obviously someone that's setting up, that's maybe left a great big manufacturer, decided to branch out on their own, you'll obviously get to see them long before they ever get to actually displaying their watches at an SIHH, a Basel World, or anything else. Who are you, or a GPHD? So who are you seeing as the up-and-comers?
There are many that try. There really aren't that many that succeed, that's for sure. The thing that has evolved over the last few years, and I think this is very positive, is that for a while people were thinking that, you know, it was kind of easy to establish a brand and make it and have it develop, and everybody would buy their products and so forth. And people have come back from this attitude, meaning that some of the smaller brands, they realize that I mean, there's no point of doing stupid or irrational business plans, telling that you're gonna sell 1,000 watches in the next couple of years. You know, people have become a little bit more reasonable, which means that in their approach of what they're doing, the notion of quality has increased. There's more, there's even more commitment to quality. And I take indeed a good example with our neighbor from Acrivia before. You know, it's a young brand. They're all young in this company, and this is really cool to see, because it shows, you know, that because, you know, sometimes people try really to play with this gray hair, beard approach type of typical watchmaker and things like that. It's not the case. Mm-hmm. Those are young kids. They're totally modern. They live in completely in the present. But nevertheless, they're very respectful of the past. And what they do is not only showing respect to that past, because they interpret it with the new... well, not necessarily a new technique, but I mean a kind of new architecture of movement and thing like that. And this is really interesting. But the thing that I really wanted to mention is that probably a few years back, if somebody had set up this company like this, they would have appreciated. Today, the Acrivia, they have their organization, they have their setup, and they know the number of watches they can produce with the level of quality that represents their brand. Okay, more or less 35 watches per year, something like that.
Wow.
And before, I mean, a few years back, probably people would have been tempted to say, oh, well, you're becoming hot, so let's aim for 100, you know? And actually, they went the other way around, and now they're reducing the numbers. And they're actually, by doing that, they're increasing the hype around them, you know. And
yeah.
and they manage their production. They manage their organization. They feel comfortable with it. It's not the French say fuite en avant. It's not just going forward without necessarily over investing and so forth. You're doing things more reasonable, and this is something that I think is very quite significant for the evolution of watchmaking. So people doing less but better, for instance, last year, I don't know if you heard about that brand called Alchemist. They came up with a fine watch. I mean, the main feature is that it's it has like a new alloy made out of copper mainly.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to, I mean, this copper is supposed to be good for your health and like that. Okay, that's kind of the marketing speech. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't know if it works, but whatever.
Yeah. I remember it well.
But they first, and I like them and they're friends, but nevertheless, they had initially announced, kind of quite, high production volumes, aiming at doing, I can't remember exactly what it was, but maybe it was like 50 watches per year or something like that. And now they've come back on that also, it's being more reasonable. And I think this is a good thing. 5-10 years ago, people would have gone crazy. And actually, most of the guys that did, they're not here anymore. As simple as that,
No, well, it's like we've got a local place in Glasgow called Ann Ordain. And they produce all kinds of boutique-style watches, enameled dials, all kinds of things like that. And then you've got Roger Smith, who obviously has very, very low production volumes. Yeah. And it makes people more attuned to the brand. Or they buy into it more because it's more, I don't know, it's more homely and specialised rather than just mass-produced.
Uh-huh. Has Roger Smith ever actually made a watch, do you think? Do you think he just keeps on saying, there's a really limited run? Do you think there's actually just one Roger Smith watch that circulates and he just keeps on saying that I'm making more, I promise, I'm making more, and that actually he's just like selling straps or something out the back door?
I think he 3D prints everything.
I've seen a few and they're remarkable.
Yeah, I know, they're great. Maybe that's also the secret, Ricky. Rather than producing two podcasts a week, we should only produce one a month. Kind of build up the hype for the next episode of the Scottish Watches.
We're all about quantity over quality.
That's true.
You know that.
So talking about quantity as we bring this thing to a close, let's touch on just what the zeitgeist is around Geneva and the Swiss watch industry. Obviously, with everything that's happening in China, with all the shows, what is the word on the ground and the feeling in the coffee shops and the bars in and around Geneva about how this year's going to go for the Swiss watch industry?
Well, strangely enough, I feel like there's still a bit of denial going on right now. And it's rather crazy because it's, it's quite gloomy, to be honest, right now. I mean, it's not good. And it's not good on both sides, I have to say. On the customer side, obviously, China is a vital player. But on the sourcing side, it's also a vital player. So
that's the dirty secret, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, imagine that, the Swiss watch industry for Swiss manufacturing being dependent on Chinese sweatshops. Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, well, maybe they're not all sweatshops, and it's not only the watchmaking industry. And this is the interesting thing. We see how interdependent all our economies have become. And you know, we're talking pharmaceutical to engine, I mean car engine. So I mean, there's so many things that are just so, yeah, so it's going to take some time, that's for sure, to recuperate from this. And exactly, it's there's a lot of question marks, I would say, but it's obviously a very serious situation. And like I said before, I mean, there are some brands that will maybe fatally be hurt.
Not come back.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Rick, for bringing that to depressing close.
The closing down of the Swiss watch industry.
Let's turn that around and talk about some good things. So what are we to look out for? What's coming next to your YouTube channel? What are the next few videos that our listeners should check out?
Okay, I take this opportunity to talk about something that is we're going to air right now, actually, because I mean, next few days, because I find this particularly amusing, and I wanted to take it even a little bit further. So obviously, we're in a leap year, right? Everybody talks about, oh, how does a perpetual calendar watch function? But he said, okay, well, we're all about video, so we're going to do like an artistic performance on the 29th of February,
right?
And we're just going to do like simple standalone shots of watches and show in real time the passage of the actual date.
Ah. Cool. Rick, have you not got a perpetual calendar?
I do have a perpetual calendar. Would you like me to send you some really low quality bad video? I will be filming mine as well, but it'll be a crappy video for Instagram Live or something.
Yeah. TikTok.
Yeah. No, yes. So we're doing this with pretty sweet watches. You know, mm-hmm. you know, simple ones, you know, like a Grubel Force, a Perpetual Calendar, mm-hmm. MBNF, Legacy, Perpetual, you know, oh, really, nice. Just little things like that. So no, this is going to be really cool. And I really compare this, you know, to the, you know, those videos where you have the fire in the chimney and that you look at it for hours. It's going to be a bit like this, you know. And what's going to be interesting is that basically some of the, on some of those watches, I mean, the jump is quite instantaneous, not fully, but quite. And then you have some where it just takes a bit more time for all the cams and gears to get into position. So again, like I said, this is more like an artistic type of thing, but I find it quite funny to do those kind of things.
Well, maybe we start a trend and we'll see how many folk we can get on displaying their perpetual calendar. I have a very old, well, it's not actually that old, but it's an original IWC Kurt Claus complication. So I look forward to seeing that ticking over.
Okay.
On the leap year.
Brilliant.
So we should see.
And talking about just you're talking about also kind of vintage, secondhand vintage watches. This is something that we're going to introduce also very shortly. Is that and this is kind of like a big news for us, obviously, because we're going to start selling vintage watches. And the reason we do that is that because, well, first of all, is that in Switzerland
money. I assume you're doing it for money.
Yeah, of course. No, of course. No,
you have to. You woke up this morning and you decided money. That's a good thing. Let's answer more of that.
Well, we have to find ways to, because I mean, we do have some. I do have some ideas of contents that I want to produce, and it needs to be financed one way or another. But the other reason is that I think vintage watches are. It's an interesting and easy way for people to get into watchmaking. I mean, not everybody can buy even you're talking $10,000 watch. I mean, that's still a lot of money, okay? But for a few hundred, I mean, 1,000, 2,000, I mean, you can get some really cool, interesting watches. I think it's a nice way for people to get into it. I've been doing it quite a lot personally, I have to say, over the last couple of years, because I have fun doing it, you know. It's and it allows me to wear different things that I like, and it has a bit of history and so forth. So yeah, this is something that we're gonna do, but we're not gonna do it all by ourselves, and you know, more do this on a consignment basis. That's going to be fun. And you know, additionally to that, I mean, we do have this Watches Club place in the old town of Geneva here, which is nice. And so to do like a monthly gathering and people showing, you know, and seeing the kind of different vintage watches that are that would be available would be also, you know, a nice way of getting people together and having a good moment.
Well, that is brilliant. Well, listen, thank you very much. I've been trying to work a way of getting you on our show for a long time, but I know that you're immensely busy. Yeah. But the production level of the things that you guys put out, now that I know there's only four of you, it just blows my mind. Yeah. It's incredible. So all our listeners should definitely go on YouTube, check out The Watches TV. And have you guys got like a website or an Instagram or places other than YouTube people can find you?
Yeah, well, obviously we have a website called thewatchestv.com and www.watchestv.com, simple as that. And Instagram is simply thewatchestv, that's it.
Brilliant. That is perfect. Well, thank you very much for spending the time with us. It's been a great hour chatting about all kinds of things.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to say something also, again, if we end up on a positive note, is that in terms of the people that are looking at us, I'm very happy to know that there are so many young people looking, you know, even though we're talking about things that are sometimes a little bit more, not edgy, but a bit more niche, let's say, put it this way.
Yeah.
And to see that you have 20, 25-year-old people that are looking and appreciating this, I think it's a very positive sign for the future of watchmaking and makes me very, very happy.
Yeah. No, you need to understand that when folk have logged on to Google to claim that they're 25 or between the ages of 25 and 30, it's because they're also using the same account for their Tinder profile. and that's what the problem is. These people are in their 50s.
Okay. So is that why yours says you're 13? So yeah. You can use TikTok?
Yeah, shush. Anyway, yeah. Thank you very much for joining us. I've really enjoyed chatting to you. That's been great. Well, thank you for joining us. You can check out everything Scottish Watches on the YouTube channel, on whatever podcast you use, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook. Where else are we, Ricky?
We have a website.
Twitter. We're on Twitter. Website. Yes, website as well. Good articles. Mm-hmm. Some great articles coming up on the website. Some quite long form ones as well for those that like a long read, rather than like me, where we just want to look at the pretty pictures.
When you want to have an extended break to the toilet when you're working.
Listen, good. You all do it. Don't kid on you don't. Some of you even take headphones and listen to the podcast. We know, because if you listen, we can see. Okay, so anyway, thanks for joining us. And as we say, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. We'll be right back.